Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, the military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Program, and Department of Veterans Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now, here's Tom Lyons.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll learn about an important 40th anniversary coming up for Vietnam veterans and Minnesota's latest legislation aimed at taking on veteran unemployment. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
How can I make a difference in the life of a military family? That's the question that comes to us at the Minnesota National Guard a lot this time of year. People start their to-do lists for holiday gatherings, and many think of those who won't be together over the holidays due to the commitments in the military. How can I make a difference in the life of a military family? I'd like to answer that question today. Go to beyondtheyellowribbon.org and click on the Make a Difference button to get started. One of the easiest ways to support military families is by becoming active in your own community. Join a Yellow Ribbon Network. You may not know if your community has an established Yellow Ribbon Network. In that case, contact your local family assistance center. You may want to make a difference by donating to an already established organization here in Minnesota. There are dozens of such organizations that all we support are military families that are looking for financial support. Another option is volunteering to assist a family. In addition to connecting with a family through your local Yellow Ribbon Network, you can register on the Military Family Care Initiative website. This site, first developed by Mrs. Mary Pawlenty, allows groups and businesses to register, volunteer services, and discounts. Learn more about the ways that you can make a difference in the life of a family this holiday season by going to beyondtheyellowribbon.org and clicking on the Make a Difference button. Thank you for listening. Today's veterans are talented, team-oriented, and technologically savvy. Help good business get better by hiring today's veteran.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining us today is John Hubble, who is the author of POW, published in 1976 by the Reader's Digest Association, Inc., which is a definitive history of the American prisoner of war experience in Vietnam, 1964 through 1973. This is a powerful and searing account of courage, heroism, and ingenuity in the face of terrifying multiple tortures, starvation, and incredible loneliness in one of the most complete accounts of the ordeal of the American prisoners of war in Vietnam. In vivid and agonizingly memorable scenes, the reader witnesses the capture of the POWs. They're being paraded through the streets of Hanoi past screaming, threatening mobs, their futile attempts of escape, their continued efforts despite repeated punishment to communicate with each other, to maintain discipline, and to retain their honor and human dignity, and their staggering ability to withstand physical and psychological torture and pain. Above all, this is an inspiring book about people in adversity, a testament to one man's support for another, and each one's dedication to a larger ideal, his country. Before writing this book, Reader's Digest roving editor John G. Hubble directed a research team that interviewed more than 200 former prisoners and spent over 2 years putting their stories together. Mr. Hubble, one of the nation's most respected writers in the field of military affairs, is with us today on Minnesota Military Radio. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Delighted to be here.
John is a Vietnam veteran. A lot of the things that I read in the book bring back some memories. But there's a lot of our generation of Americans that were born after the Vietnam War and a long time after this book was published in 1976. To me, this sounds like after the POWs came home on February 12th, the first batch of them, 1973, which is almost 40 years ago. What an incredible assignment for you to go out and put together your team and go out to research and talk with 200 POWs.
Yeah, I don't think anything like this had ever been done before, and I'm not sure it'll ever happen again. The digest began to think about it in December of 1972. The war had dragged on, and the and the our administration had been trying to talk to the leaders at Hanoi for months and months, and they kept changing the shape of the table, and they couldn't get anywhere with the negotiations. And finally, on December 1872, the president, who was Nixon at the time, ordered an all-out assault on the military establishments around Hanoi and Haiphong, the two North Vietnamese cities that were the center of their war effort. And it was an 11-day bombardment that caused the North Vietnamese to sue for peace. And when that happened, we knew that the POW, we had done several articles on the POWs in prior years. We began getting ready to see them come home. We wondered exactly what had their captivity been like, what had they endured, how had they been treated, how had they performed, what was the story about the American captivity in Vietnam. And we spent the next 3 years interviewing the returnees, and I had to put the whole thing together.
And your boss gave you this incredible assignment and said, go do what it takes, go wherever it takes, just go get it done.
That's exactly what happened.
What an incredible event. And what did you think about it, and how did you get started?
Well, we got started the day that they came out. We watched them come out on television. Jerry Denton was a Navy captain at the time, and he had been shot. I don't know how he'd been in there for several years. And he was the fellow that spoke for the Vietnamese. The first plane that landed at Clark Field in the Philippines, he spoke for them, and he was very impressive. And he looked healthy. He had a big smile on his face, and he talked about what an honor it had been to serve his country under difficult circumstances. So he was the first guy that I got in touch with, and I spent a couple of days talking to him down at his home at that time in Norfolk, Virginia. He later became a Navy admiral, and after that he retired and became a senator from Alabama.
John, as a group, you told me that they were all in pretty good shape and good frame of mind.
They all looked to be in very good shape. They were in good frames of mind, and I think that was because of the way they supported each other in Hanoi. In imprisonment, they came out of it as a military unit. It's not even as though they came from different squadrons. They all seemed like they belonged to the same unit.
John, in your book, you talk about how they were captured and how they went from place to place in these different camps. And the tap code is something that not everybody hears about. It's a method of communications that they used, despite the fact that the North Vietnamese did everything they could do to stop it, didn't they?
They sure did. And the tap code had been invented by the prisoners of war during the Korean War. And somebody remembered learning about it from some of the people who had been captives in Korea and brought it to the Hanoi Hilton. And so that's how they communicated.
John, one of the quotes in the book says, dying is easy, living is the difficult thing.
Yeah, that referred to an Army Lieutenant Colonel named Floyd Thompson. He was the first American captured in Vietnam, and he spent about 10 years in captivity. Lived most of that time in a cage in the jungle, and in fact, I think that statement was made when he was on the verge of death. And he survived several times, and one of his captors said that to him. Dying is easy. Living is the difficult thing.
John, you're right about a lot of torture, a lot of incredible survival, how the prisoners pulled together and supported each other. You've interviewed so many of these and over 100 of them yourself. How did those interviews affect you as a writer and as a person, as a man?
Well, I admired these people tremendously. I'm not sure I could have done what they did. I'm not sure. I think everybody that has read the book has said the same thing. How did they do this? How did they survive this? How could you go through that and not commit suicide or stay alive? it left me feeling sort of infuriated because of the length of time the war had lasted. There was really no reason for it in retrospect. Here's a backwater, a third-rate backwater country that held the United States at bay for 10 years, and it shouldn't have happened. It was due to mismanagement by the policymakers in Washington. They didn't pay attention. They disregarded the advice of their military professionals. Shouldn't have happened. If they had done the right thing, the war probably wouldn't have ever become a war. It might have been an incident, an episode. Lasted a few days, not 10 years.
John, throughout this process, you developed a great deal of respect for these men, and you made some really good friendships, didn't you?
I did. I made some close friends that I remain close friends with. Dick Ballstad is one. He's from Minneapolis.
And we're going to talk to him in the next segment and about how it affected his life. He was captured and in custody or in jail in the camps for over 7.5 years.
Yes.
And there's some pretty incredible stories about he and his wife that I want to get to in that.
Yes.
John, just a couple last things. In February of next year, it's going to be 40 years since that first plane load of POWs came back. To me, a very important anniversary, and we're going to do a whole show on it, and we'd like you to come back and talk to us, and we're going to interview a number of the POWs, as many as we can find. How do you feel about the fact that 40 years have passed?
It seems like yesterday to me, and other than that, I must say I feel old.
Me too, John. But it was an incredible experience reading your book, and it's still available, isn't it?
It's available with iUniverse. They published the book on demand. In fact, I'm just amazed. At the end of June, I got another royalty check for $28.43. 40 years later.
That's pretty good, John. Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to interviewing Dick Ballstad, and I'm very much looking forward to putting on a whole hour show about this incredible 40-year anniversary coming up in February, and you're going to come back and help us with that show.
Sounds great. I look forward to it.
All right. That was John Hubble, the author of POW, published in 1976 by Reader's Digest Association on Minnesota Military Radio. Today we'll learn about veterans' preference at the county level, and learn how changes in both the public and private sector will affect veterans' preference. And joining me now to discuss veterans' preference is Alan Duff, president of Duff Consulting. Alan, you were on the show some time ago, and as I recall, you were a veteran of the military.
Yes, I am. 23 years, retired in 2005 as a major, served in Desert Storm. Currently active, running Duff Consulting. We're a service-disabled, veteran-owned small business based in Isani that does marketing and outreach services, and also serve as a county commissioner in Isanti County.
County commissioner.
Yes.
Sounds like that'll keep you out of trouble in the evenings, won't it?
Some days, yes. Some days, maybe not.
Okay. Today we're going to talk about veterans' preference. Can you help us understand what were the key changes in the state's legislation for veterans' preference?
Well, Tom, there were two key changes in the legislation that passed unanimously through the House and through the Senate and signed off by the governor. Those two key changes were, number one, expanding the definition to go beyond construction-only type of services. As we looked at the type of veterans that were coming home from overseas deployments, we saw that there was a big diversity of skill sets that they were bringing back to the marketplace. So that was a key thing in working with the legislators, was expanding the definition to include much more than just construction services, but all the different phases of construction, as well as other types of services such as printing and other types of disciplines and skills. The second part of it was implementing the state legislation and giving the option of implementing it at the local level of government. A lot of these smaller businesses were having a difficult time meeting the construction or contracting needs of the larger state projects, such as the state DOT highway projects. So to help out the smaller businesses, there was discussion on offering the opportunity for local government to also add these options within their local procurement practices.
And Alan, can you tell us briefly what does veterans preference do for the small businesses they're trying to get these contracts?
Veteran preference allows up to a 6% preference for the bid of a contractor that's bidding on the project. There's also set aside goals for some contracting agencies for the subcontracting of veteran-owned businesses as well.
So when a project goes out for bids, and whoever's going through the bids analyzes those and qualifies them, you get a little step up, in essence.
In a sense, if you were to bid $100,000 and another firm bid $95,000, if you had the 6% preference, your rate would effectively be $94,000. You would be the successful bidder then.
So then you'd be the, even though you're getting the 100, you'd get the bid as if you were bidding 94.
Correct.
Okay. Were there any concerns with expanding this preference to the county level of government?
No, there were not. It was very exciting to see this pass through the legislature unanimously, like I said earlier, throughout through the state rep and the Senate side, as well as being signed off by the governor. So no concerns. The county associations that I was involved with were all very much in favor of this. The option is for the counties that they may implement this. They don't have to. They may. And some are and others are not at this point in time.
So what can the county do to implement veteran-friendly policies?
They can replicate the preference program that is listed at the state register, and there is one county that has already done that, and that is Chisago County, which has done a fantastic job of, shall we say, mirroring the state preference program that is set up by MnDOT at this time.
So when the county's out requesting bids for whatever projects they have to do that year, then they can do some things to allow the veterans to get the preference and have access to some of these projects.
Absolutely. And I just want to take a minute to go over some of the details of the Chisago County program, is that they have expanded it beyond the construction arena to include other areas such as the printing. They've also added an element to it, which is very helpful from the workforce aspect of getting the veterans hired, in that they allow a preference to be included if there is the company has 10% hiring of veterans or more. So a very innovative step that I applaud Chisago County for implementing in their practice, in their veteran preference program at their county. And speaking with them earlier today, they've been very active in utilizing this so far. And this has been a really good first step, and there are other counties that are thinking of enacting this as we speak today.
Alan, I think there's a lot of veteran-owned small businesses out there that think two things. Number one, too much paperwork to go through to try to get any of these preference contracts. And number two, there are $10 and $20 and $30 million contracts. Not true, is it?
Well, that's one reason why we trickled this down to the local level of government, because those projects are a lot smaller. And back to Chisago County, some of these projects are, you know, probably under $100,000 contracts. They're not those multi-million dollar road construction projects. So if you're a veteran and have that veteran status, there is some paperwork involved with it, obviously, but I think it's a great return on investment to do the work necessary to get qualified as a veteran-owned company.
Alan, we've got about 30 seconds left. If you had that time to say something to the veteran-owned small businesses, would you encourage them to take a chance?
This is a great time for veteran-owned businesses in the state of Minnesota. We have a lot of agencies that are on board and excited to work with the veteran-owned companies, and I applaud the many state legislators who are enacting these policies to help out those veterans and getting into the marketplace. And not only is that going on in the public sector, but in the private sector as well, there's companies that will give preference towards the hiring of veteran-owned businesses. So it's a great time to establish yourself as a veteran-owned business in the state of Minnesota.
Alan, thanks for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom.
When we come back, we'll check out what's happening in the private sector for veterans' preference with Senator Ted Daley. Now it's time to hire Minnesota's heroes. With an unemployment rate twice the average, Minnesota's veterans are facing an unemployment crisis. The good news is that you can help. Each week, we'll feature one veteran story and ask you to help hire Minnesota's heroes. This week's veteran is former Navy Commander Pete Kazanowski. Pete, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you very much.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, sir?
Sure, I can. Well, I served 20 years in the military as a Navy officer, and while there I acquired extensive leadership, training, and operations experience. I was part of the leadership team for three reserve centers preparing reserve personnel for deployment. Then after the military, I worked as a federal project manager marketing engineering services to the local and federal government agencies. And currently, I'm looking for a position as an operations or program manager. I have an MBA, and that has helped me to develop my business acumen so I can optimize budgets and meet corporate objectives. I also have a Six Sigma certification, and I really have a passion for making communications and other processes run more efficiently.
Commander, I hope you find another position real soon, and thanks for joining us today.
Sure. Thank you very much.
Pete and hundreds of others are ready to work hard on the next mission. Can we hire Minnesota's heroes? To connect with Pete, contact the Hennepin South Workforce Center at 952-346-4000. That's 952-346-4000. Or to learn more, visit positivelyminnesota.com/veterans. Coming up next on Minnesota Military Radio, we'll hear from State Senator Ted Daley about his efforts on behalf of our veterans. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us.
Hi, this is Bill Popp of the Minnesota Military Family Foundation. The number one request of deployed soldiers, sailors, and airmen is take care of my family. The Minnesota Military Family Foundation does just that. We take care of military families. The foundation helps military families when a family has an unexpected financial crisis. We have replaced or repaired many furnaces and appliances, as well as fixed cars to help get children to school, daycare, or the doctor. And we've paid for the transportation and lodging for the family to visit their soldier in the hospital that may be thousands of miles from home. We help military families with many types of financial needs. Military families make many sacrifices. One way you can show your appreciation and say thank you is with your financial support. Please donate. Go to MinnesotaMilitaryFamilyFoundation.org. Another way is to buy support our troop license plates. Yes, we take care of military families. And thank you, military families.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we'll learn more about Minnesota's latest legislation aimed at taking on veteran unemployment. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelleton.
Since 1943, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs Claims Division and the American Legion's Department of Minnesota has worked together to help veterans understand their benefits and file claims for those benefits. This time-tested partnership allows American Legion service officers the ability to go out and conduct outreach and raise awareness among the veterans about different programs and services here in Minnesota, while the MDVA Claims Office handles the claim application process. The relationship between the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs Claims Office and the American Legion Department of Minnesota is based on a handshake agreement, and because of its great success, is a program we may see emulated in other states. It's mutually beneficial and benefits all our veterans. Teamwork has helped veterans understand and file for their benefits.
Thank you, Commissioner Shelleton. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Now here to tell us about changes and things happening in the private sector for veterans' preference is State Senator Ted Daley. Senator Daley, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you very much, Tom, for having me here.
Senator, I understand that before you were involved in politics, you were in the military and you still are.
Yes, I am, sir. Sir, yes, sir.
Senator, no, I was just an old sergeant, so you don't have to serve me.
Oh, so you worked, you were one of those working NCOs.
Well, if you want to get something done, you find an NCO. Senator, can you tell us a little bit about your military career?
I will. I'll try to be brief. I graduated from West Point in 1988 and served a year in Korea, 2nd Infantry Division. Then I was reassigned to the 101st Airborne. I went over to the Middle East and was in Desert Shield, Desert Storm. After that, came back to the States and was in the Army Reserve for a number of years. 9/11 happened, and then I went back onto active duty and deployed to Israel and to Cuba and again to Iraq in 2008.
And what led you into politics, sir?
Well, it's that time that I was in Iraq in 2008, I'd hit my 20-year mark, both a combination of active duty Army and Army Reserve time. And I thought, okay, I've done 20 years in the military. How can I serve my country? I want to continue serving in some capacity, but instead of internationally and overseas here in Iraq with the military, what is it that I can do back home in Minnesota to continue to make a difference? And getting involved in state elected official politics kinds of things was something that my background as a CPA, my background with my MBA, my master's in business administration at the University of St. Thomas, and activity in the local community in Eagan and Burnsville was something that just made a lot of sense to a couple of people, and they suggested that I consider it. I did. I ran my first campaign in 2010. I'd never even run for student council, so it was quite a challenge to learn how campaigns work. But I was able to win, and once I was in, very happy to be able to focus on veterans' issues, very wide bipartisan issue that both parties are supportive of, and that's something that's very important to me.
And, Senator, I know that after you were elected, you're now the vice chairman of the Minnesota State Government and Veterans Committee, and were involved in this recent legislation concerning veterans' preference. Can you tell us what does this new law do?
Absolutely. This is one of the really important things that we were able to pass this last legislative session. And the statute basically says that it permits a preference for private employers to hire and promote veterans. And in the case of a spouse who's the spouse of a disabled or deceased veteran, that private non-public employer may grant preference in hiring and promotion to a spouse of a disabled veteran who has a service-connected permanent and total disability and to a surviving spouse of a deceased veteran. That's the language right out of the statute. And it simply allows our private sector employers to have and to market their preference to hire and promote our veterans. It's not a mandate. It's permissive language which allows them to do it and for them to then not run into conflict with federal law.
And, Senator, what talents or values do veterans bring to the private sector companies?
Well, in the Army, I never served in the Navy, but I know that the Navy and the Air Force and other services have similar values. But the Army's seven values are something that these soldiers bring to the employer: the duty, the honor, country, loyalty, selfless service, courage, those kinds of attributes, the problem-solving skills that they have. They're very talented, they're intelligent, they're hardworking. They're the kind of people that you want working for you for so many reasons.
Senator, today's military is an all-volunteer military, much different from when I was in, but they're first-class folks. They do a great job despite repeated appointments. They keep relisting and going back. It's a pretty talented crew in the military today, isn't it?
It absolutely is, and they want to make a difference. They want to serve their country. They come back, and they have these phenomenal experiences, this talent, and they've been a part of something that's bigger than themselves, and they want to continue with serving in some capacity. So these employers are getting a really talented, intelligent, hardworking person who wants to excel and exceed expectations. They're getting somebody that is going to, you know, knock them off their socks. They're going to do a great job for the company because it's more than just about what's in it for me. They're looking to help others and to serve. And instead of serving their country, how can I serve this company? What can I do to make a difference?
And, Senator, it's hard maybe for civilian employers to understand, but one analogy that we've used on this show before was think about 2,700 Red Bulls traveling halfway around the world to Kuwait, set up a base, feed themselves water, equipment, go on combat duty. The logistics of picking up that many people and all that equipment, go halfway around the world and do the mission in an incredible style. Our military today is well-trained, well-disciplined, and ready to come back and go to work, aren't they?
And they are proactive. They know how to take the initiative. They don't need to just sit around and wait to be told. Yes, they're in the military, and they know how to take orders. But they're also creative problem solvers that know how to take that initiative and be proactive and get things done. When they see that there's a challenge, a problem, an opportunity to make it happen, they do.
And this veterans preference bill is just a way to acknowledge their service to the country and give them a chance to get a position.
Our veterans have been facing, here in Minnesota, one of the highest unemployment rates in the country. And we said, we've got to do something. We don't want to force our employers to do something. Let's find something that allows them. It's not a mandate, again, like I said before. It's this permissive language that allows our employers to have a preference to hire our veterans.
Senator, what's next on your list to honor the service of our military veterans?
Well, one of the things, you know, with the focus on jobs and the economy, we really want to think of ways that we can do that. How can we bring talent to the state of Minnesota? And one of the things that these career military officers and non-commissioned officers look at when they're retiring, they're getting off active duty, whether they're in Fort Bragg, North Carolina, Fort Hood, Texas, Fort Benning, somewhere in San Diego, or, you know, wherever. They're looking at the different states and how their pension is taxed. Almost all the states have a tax-exempt military pension. Minnesota is one of the very few that does not. This would be something that we should consider. I brought it to the Senate last year. We'll do it again this time, and hopefully we have the support, because that will, again, bring these talented military leaders to the state of Minnesota.
And keep them from living in another state just to avoid that tax.
Unfortunately, that is a reality. So
we need that talent here, Senator. We've got about 30 seconds left. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
It's an honor to have served so many years in the military, to be in Iraq and to serve our country and know what this great country is all about, to see it from another country and then be able to come back. And, you know, I wake up and I say it's a great day to be alive. I see my fingers and all my toes, and I'm so blessed and fortunate to be back here in this country and to have the opportunity to serve in the Minnesota Senate. It's a great honor. It's a great privilege. And I want to honor fellow veterans. And so I'm hoping to win the election November 6th so I can continue the work that I've started to honor our veterans.
Senator, thanks for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you very much, Tom.
When we come back, we'll talk to the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. We'll give us an update on what's happening in the public sector for veterans' preference. Please stay with us. Up next, we'll hear from Clint Bucher from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, who will give us an update on what's happening in the public sector for veterans' preference. Clint, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Well, thank you, Tom. It's a pleasure to be here.
Clint, I understand you're the former Minnesota State Commander of the VFW and the current commander of the A.R. Patterson VFW Post 7 in Mound and the United States Navy Vietnam War veteran. Welcome to the show from another old Vietnam War veteran.
Well, thank you, and thank you for your service, and thank you for serving during Vietnam.
And you too. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Well, basically, 1 week after high school, I was in basic training, like most persons during the draft era. We did our service, and we did honorably and did well. Matter of fact, most people aren't aware that in Minnesota during the Vietnam era, over 6,800 persons served. 68,000 persons served, and of that, the average age was 19. So most of us did our duty and did it honorably, served well, and then came back to civilian life, and that would basically describe my contributions. I served aboard an aircraft carrier, the USS Ticonderoga, two tours in the South China Sea. We, on a good day, we launched approximately 115 sorties airplanes, Phantoms mostly, that dropped ordnance on Vietnam.
And we were young at one time, weren't we?
As I say, young and dumb. I'm no longer 19, 9 foot tall and bulletproof.
There you go. And Clint, now you're working for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs.
Yes.
And can you tell us, does the Minnesota Department of Affairs provide legal advice to veterans about veterans' preference rights?
Actually, we do not provide legal advice per se. We're not authorized to provide legal advice, but we do attempt to provide information about the various veterans' preference laws and then urge them to take their specific legal questions to an attorney. However, many of the laws can be broken down into two categories. Some of the veterans' preference laws basically protect or grant limited veterans' preference to veterans on the way into the job, so to speak. And then the other category would be protection in public positions from unfair dismissals, demotions, or layoffs. So oftentimes there's confusion and need for more information, particularly if a veteran's staring a potential layoff. They have need for information, and employers also call sometimes and would like to know that the process they're about to utilize has covered most of the bases, most of the T's have been crossed and I's been dotted, and we walk through that process with them. With the final caveat, we urge them to take their final questions to their attorney.
Clint, what are the most common types of questions you get at the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs about veterans' preference?
Well, usually, referring back to the earlier comment about the two types, veterans frequently want to know on the local government jobs, if they've applied for a position, how the point system works, and they're not always quite sure when they get their extra 10 or when they get their extra 15 points. And, of course, the 15 points would be for the disabled veterans who've earned a passing score, and they sometimes are curious to know how it works. But the most, I guess, pressing questions typically come when veterans have received a notice of intent to terminate to ensure that they understand their rights and how they should exercise them.
We're speaking with Clint Booker from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs on Minnesota Military Radio. Clint, we've just had a couple other guests on, and we've been talking about some recent changes from the Minnesota State Legislature. Has veterans' preference employment rights been expanded?
Yes, it has. There has been a number of expansion statutes that were amended and or created. For example, in local government, I mean county, city, and so forth, the as what's known as the point system increased from 5 to 10 points to actually to 10 and 15 points. So a non-disabled veteran that has a passing score in a local government position would now be entitled to 10 points, and a disabled veteran who applies for a local government position and gets a passing score would be entitled to 15 points. And those points are also awarded to the spouses of veterans under both circumstances. So that was an increase.
So these points allow them to move up the stack in terms of who's eligible to be hired?
Yeah, the phrase is to provide limited veterans preference. Now, there was a state Supreme Court case of Hall versus the city of Champlin that found that all local government employers must have a system, quote, capable of being reduced to a 100-point scale. Now, if you look at that, this by granting an extra 10 or 15 points, that can make a significant difference of whether they will likely get interviewed or perhaps even hired. It doesn't guarantee that they'll get the job, but it does provide preference in the public local government positions.
Now, Clint, when the legislature updated the Veterans Preference Law and expanded the rights, did they also change the employment dismissal hearing rights?
Actually, they did. In the past, the dismissal rights required the employer to notify the veteran of the intent to terminate and to inform the veteran that they had 60 days within which to request a veterans preference hearing and point out that if they did not respond within the 60 days, they lost that right. Well, that is still in place, but there is an additional component now, and that is the employer must now also inform the veteran that when the veteran responds and requests a veterans preference hearing, if a three-person panel is authorized, the veteran must also provide to the employer the name, the mailing address, and the telephone number of their three-person panel representative. And that was quite a change, and we think that'll make a more streamlined and more time-effective process. And that same law also granted the assurance that both the employer and the veteran have the right to appeal that finding to the next court level.
Clint, we're just about out of time, but I'm sure that some of our listeners might have some questions about veterans' preference. Is there a site they can go to for information?
Yes, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs website is www.mdva.mn.us.
Or they can go to minnesotaveteran.org.
Yes, that would work also.
Clint, just about out of time. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
Yes. Veterans have many benefits now that were earned by persons prior to them. For example, World War II veterans provided the basis of the GI Bill. Unfortunately, only approximately six out of 10 persons are utilizing them. I would urge veterans to learn about their current and existing benefits, utilize them, and last but not least, be prepared to pass the torch to the next generation, pay forward, and ensure that the next generation of veterans also has those rights and more.
Clint, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
That was Clint Boucher from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs talking about veterans' preference, and more information can be found at minnesotaveteran.org. Joining me now is my military producer, Staff Sergeant Ben Houtkoper. Sergeant Ben, last weekend was a pretty great weekend. We got to spend a little time with our friend Chuck Haas and the Hugo and Stillwater Yellow Ribbon programs. Pretty good weather. Nice weekend. You were out there. I was out there. Great time, wasn't it?
The hunt was amazing. That was so well put together. Got to shoot some clays, take down some pigeons, had a great meal. It was absolutely amazing.
It was over 2 days, all day Saturday and Sunday, and I think there was room for like 200 veterans out there.
Yeah, absolutely, and they even had some folks that weren't able to make it at the last minute, so, you know, had more people signed up, I'm sure they could have packed it full.
And I went out there and I even shot some clays and nobody got hurt, Ben, so we're okay.
Oh, absolutely. And speaking of not getting hurt, we did run into a gentleman, Alex, from the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, and he is looking for firearm safety instructors for their online course. I know a lot of people like myself in the military were very familiar with keeping safe while using firearms. So if anyone's interested and want to pass on your passion for hunting and shooting sports by teaching the safety of firearms, we'll put some information on our Facebook site so they can check it out.
And Ben, I think you had one other mention about the Veterans Home.
Yeah, absolutely. The Minnesota Veterans Home in Minneapolis has just opened a brand new adult day center. It's open Monday through Friday from 8 until 4:30. It provides a full day of events for our veterans. Their goal is to keep the veterans, you know, in their homes as long as they can. So while their son or daughter or family is taking care of them and needs to go to work, they can rest assured that their veteran is well taken care of there at the Minneapolis Veterans Home.
Place where they can take them, drop them off, and rest assured that they'll be well taken care of throughout the day.
Absolutely, with their fellow veterans.
Ben, I think that's all we had for mentions today. I just want to send out one more thank you to Chuck Haas. That Veterans Hunt in the Wild Game feed was fantastic.
Amazing.
Chuck, you did a great job.
Absolutely.
We're just about out of time. If you have a mailbag question or a suggestion for a topic you'd like us to address, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com and click on Contact Us to send us a note. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, John Hubble, Alan Duff, State Senator Ted Daly, Clint Booker, Commissioner Larry Shalado of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we discover the history of Minnesota's Jewish war veterans and learn about an effort to commemorate the sacrifices of our state's military families. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to Minnesota Military Radio with Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition firm. This has been a production of Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Podcasts of the show are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.